Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Folks, thanks for coming along tonight, where the Honourable Will Hodgman makes a first appearance, a very welcome appearance at the Sydney Institute. He's well known, so I'll introduce him briefly. The member for Franklin in Tasmania since 2002, before that a barrister, premier since 2014, and won the recent election in Tasmania. So Mr. Hodgman's claim to fame, among many claims to fame, is that I think he's only the second Liberal leader to lead the party into a second period of majority government, because under the Hare Clark system in Tasmania, that's not an easy task for a Liberal leader. But he achieved it, and Premier since 2014, and won the last election. And tonight, Mr. Hodgman, the Honourable Will Hodgman, is going to speak for us on Tasmania, the turnaround state, how Australia's smallest state has turned around and now has the fastest growing economy in the country. Mr. Hodgman, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Recently, I had to tell the Prime Minister to get his facts straight, because Tasmania is not the turnaround state as he often describes us. We've in fact long since turned the corner and are powering ahead at quite a pace. And I'm delighted to be here with the Sydney Institute this evening to tell you all about how we've done it. So a great thank you to Jared and to Anne and to the Institute for your interest in our island state. And also the important function that the Institute plays in discussing the affairs of our Federation. In no small part, the feat of our smaller state having a big spring in its step is something that I'm delighted to talk with you about this evening. But first I have to take you back to around 2014, and back then Tasmania had stalled. It was said in national newspapers that we were a mendicant basket case, in more trouble than Greece, ranked dead last in the economic rankings. And to make matters worse, by early 2014, I'd been the leader of the opposition for 8 years. That's quite an apprenticeship. It might have been shorter, having won the election before in 2010. Well, at least we won more of the popular vote. But Hare Clark delivered a dead heat with 10 Liberal, 10 Labor and 5 Greens. There was a constitutional deadlock. We, the Liberal Party, were unwilling to form a minority government for two important reasons. Firstly, minority governments had been bad for Tasmania, and I'd promised repeatedly that whatever happened, I would do no deals with any party, the Greens or any other party, to form government. And that was the second important reason, doing what we promised. Doing what we promised Tasmanians was very important. Labor had made the same promise, but they broke it. We kept it, and so began the term of the 47th Parliament and a Labor-Green coalition government, and another 4 years in opposition for me and my team. And I've always said that was a big call, and perhaps at some personal cost, but it's one I'd make again, because, as I say, minority governments have been bad for Tasmania. And during the term of this particular one, 10,000 jobs were lost in our state, the budget was wrecked, our population declined as people sought opportunities elsewhere, business confidence levels were the lowest in the country, and a survey of those businesses that were left found that two-thirds of them thought the government's policies were actually working against them. And a Deloitte Access Economics report concluded Tasmania is in trouble. But it was during those years in opposition that my team and I worked very hard alongside business and industry and the community sector to build a strong team with a strong policy platform for change that would take to the people of Tasmania in the election of 2014. And it is important to note that our team was strong. We'd also made a promise and sworn to stick together, to determinedly avoid the familiar fate of political parties turning on each other, worrying more about themselves and not on the people that really matter, the Tasmanians who elected them. So we swore that that would not be us, and that we'd shelve any political ambitions or factional battles and ignore the commentary of our political opponents or the media, wanting for some internal political turmoil that never happened. We'd proved to Tasmanians that we could be trusted to focus on the things that mattered to them. As we could run ourselves, we could run the state. And by March 2014, we were ready. And at that 2014 election, we secured the trust of the Tasmanian public. And it was a result unparalleled in its scale for our state, the largest majority for any government since the 25-member parliament was established back in 1998, the first time that any party had gained 4 seats out of 5 in a single electorate in Braddon. In this parliamentary system, we received 51.2% of the primary vote, which was more than the previous landslides in New South Wales and Queensland. And it was quite a day. But too early, on the morning of Sunday, the 16th of March, the day after the election, I, with my deputy and the state's new treasurer, got straight down to work. I wanted to demonstrate that we're hitting the ground running on day one, delivering the plan that we'd prepared in opposition, and to declare that Tasmania was officially open for business. We had been through some tough times as a state, but it was a new dawn, and the days of uncertainty and instability under a minority government were behind us. And it was always our first priority to stimulate the economy and to restore confidence, because we, my government and my political party, firmly believe in the power of business and enterprise to deliver the brighter future that we'd promised Tasmanians. It is the way to build a more prosperous community and a state. So, for instance, we immediately abolished developer charges, which had deterred investment and also attracted new investment and developers to our state. We started a process of reforming our planning system to make it simpler and faster, to facilitate more development across the state, and to deliver a single statewide planning scheme. At that time, there were 29 of them in Tasmania, confusing, complicating and impeding development. We extended payroll tax relief on our way to delivering the most competitive payroll tax regime in the country during our first term in office to encourage businesses to take on more staff. We changed the rules to favour Tasmanian businesses competing for government work, standing beside our business to give them confidence and to create more jobs. And we actively fought hard to save and keep jobs in Tasmania. Qantas was then consolidating its call centres across the country, putting at risk hundreds of jobs in the Hobart call centre. 7 years earlier, the Myer store in Hobart had burnt down and not been rebuilt, leaving a huge hole in the heart of the CBD that for years symbolised lack of progress and even hope. So I got on the phone as a brand new Premier to Alan Joyce and to Bernie Brooks and asked, what do we need to do to keep you here? We won the bid for Qantas to establish their call centre in Hobart and helped start the building of a big brand new Myer store that is now part of a much more vibrant CBD in a state with the strongest retail trade in the country. And this helped restore confidence for people to see progress and to turn around what had seemed intractable previously. Amongst a number of other important changes we made, without doubt the most important of them all was to commence what will be long-term generational reform and to lift what were for far too long the worst education results in the country. Because, believe it or not, in 2014 in Tasmania, all our Tasmanian high schools did not offer years 11 and 12 for Tasmanian students. The only state in the country with a fractured system where so many Tasmanian students were failed and who simply dropped out of their education at year 10 thinking that their schooling had finished without making the change to attend one of our colleges. And combined with a later starting age for our younger students, which we're also remedying, and a premature exit, I was told then that many Tasmanian students were leaving school with almost as much as 2 years less education than their counterparts in other states. Is it little wonder Tasmania's education system was lagging the rest of the country? So, from day one, we also commenced this long-term plan to improve the prospects of young Tasmanians and the productivity of our state by extending all our high schools to offer years 11 and 12. And since then, we've increased access to education for young Tasmanians from disadvantaged communities. It will be a long process to turn this around, but I'm extremely proud of the fact that in our time in government, our school retention rates and our certificate of education attainment levels have increased by 10%. And when I think of the young Tasmanians that make up that 10% and the many more who'll benefit from our policy change in the years to come, I've no doubt it will be the most profound contributor to our turnaround. We started reforming a disjointed health system, building a new Royal Hobart Hospital, our state's primary hospital. It had been talked about for a decade and nothing had happened. We launched what is still a bold and not without some controversy of policy to invite ideas from private investors and developers and tourism operators to expand the range of exciting and unique experiences that we have on offer in our wilderness areas, our World Heritage Area and National Parks, one of Tasmania's greatest and most precious assets, but to establish Tasmania as a truly world-class ecotourism destination, where now 40% of tourists to our state come to visit our amazing wilderness areas. And as Minister for Tourism from day one, my government has backed this sector like none other to transform our visitor economy to be the best in the country, supporting more jobs per capita of any state in the country. Tourism, our events, our festivals, the arts have indeed been a huge part of Tasmania's renaissance. I can't pay sufficient enough tribute to the excellent Tasmanian businesses that are the force behind the surge in Tasmania being the nation's premier destination. And Tasmania and its tourism industry supports 17% of our workforce, more than any other state. We are a government that strongly supports this important part of our economy, and it has fueled our economic resurgence. Also, building confidence in Tasmanians who now see with pride that our place is somewhere where more people want to be. And we've also done all we can and will continue, as is our mission, to ensure that we continue to provide the best business environment so that our businesses can continue to prosper. Fixing the budget was the other essential and still is a non-negotiable for my government to make sure that our budget is in good shape. We deferred delivering our first budget so that we could make it our own and not simply adopt one from the former government just voted out of office. It also allowed us to understand the true extent of the budget risks we faced as a new government, and it was a mess. We inherited deficits of $1.1 billion, previous government spending way beyond what the state could afford, and we had to stop the bleeding. That meant making some decisions that were politically unpopular, reducing public service numbers, ceasing some government programs. We were, of course, though, also determined to deliver all we'd promised in the election campaign, but be a government that lived within its means, not spending more than we earned. And I'd suggest another critical, essential character trait of a good Liberal government, certainly one of mine. And this year, despite inheriting those successive budget deficits, we've delivered budget surpluses for 4 years in a row and will continue to do so over the forward estimates. And this in itself supports a more confident business community. But more importantly, our ability to invest in the services that Tasmanians need. And there's still a lot more work to be done in that regard, but also the infrastructure that our growing state needs requires a budget in good shape. So today, as we're approaching the halfway mark of that second term in government, Tasmania is without doubt in good shape. We have one of, if not the best, performing economies of any state in the country. Across any measure, although Gladys, I know, would argue with me on that. But I'd like you to consider this. Tasmania's state final demand, the fastest rate of growth of any state. It's the first time that's happened in over 15 years. We've tripled the rate of growth in New South Wales, and that's the first time we've done that in a quarter of a century. Gross state product has risen on a per capita basis, the fastest rate in the country. Private investment, the fastest growth rate in the country at 7%. Retail trade, the highest growth rate in the country. Housing approvals and finance are up. We're the only state in the country where that's occurred. The fastest growing rate of building work completed, while all the other states have in fact declined. Engineering construction's up, the strongest rate in the country. Tourists are up, importantly spending more than ever before. Our farmers are ranked the most confident in the country. Our population has been growing at its highest rate in 30 years. And most importantly, there's more work for Tasmanians, with business confidence levels the highest now in the country and business conditions ranked the best. There are now 1,600 more businesses operating in our state than when we first took office back in 2014. And they're investing and they're employing more. There are 15,000 more Tasmanians employed than when we came into government. So our economy's stronger. Tasmania's a much more confident place to be, especially for our businesses. And our challenge as a government's to keep it that way and to make sure we do continue to provide the best environment in the country, because it's that which has driven the turnaround of our state. It's that which drives the economic success I've outlined. It's not done by business. It's done by our business community. It is them who we must thank for Tasmania's turnaround. But it's not just economically where Tasmania is excelling. It's also socially, culturally and environmentally. Tasmania's been awarded the world's best museum, hotels, bushwalks, bike rides, festivals, farmers of the year, whiskies, wines, honeys and cheeses. Each year we win more tourism awards at the national level than any other state. Tasmania is now more culturally confident and much more self-assured, as you can probably see. We're the first state in the country and one of few in the world to establish a statutory place-based branding authority, making the most of our important brand and reflecting it to the rest of the world to ensure that we continue to stand out and compete strongly in the marketplace. And we are protecting uniquely Tasmanian brand values and attributes that enhance all that Tasmania now is. We have chosen to be the only state that is GMO-free, further enhancing our brand and giving a great marketing advantage to our exporters who use that to access premium markets across the world. We're leading the nation in renewable energy generation. We're on track to be 100% renewable, self-sufficient by 2022. That in itself is a remarkable brand attribute that supports our businesses and their products. We're in fact the first state to reach zero net emissions in 2016. We're one of the lowest emitters of carbon dioxide on the planet. We've got the cleanest air in the world. We've got what are ranked amongst the best renewable energy zones in the country. We've got abundant waterways and hydro storages that are propelling nation-building infrastructure that will establish Tasmania as the renewable energy powerhouse of the country and give the rest of the nation what it wants, good, cheap, clean energy. And not only will we be able to do that, we'll also have a most valuable commodity for Tasmania to export into that unstable national market that desperately wants what we've got. And it's estimated that that project, which we're working very closely with the Morrison government to deliver, will inject about $6.5 billion into Tasmania's economy and create around 2,400 jobs. All of this can only be done by working together with our coalition government, and that's another reason for our state's turnaround, working cooperatively with our national government to deliver major projects and to work in unison, as people would expect us to do. So while our state's economy remains strong and in many respects is bucking a national trend, we do need to take action to ensure that we mitigate against any slowdowns. So there will be savings, our savings measures in our budget to ensure we live within our means. It's why we are aggressively pursuing a major infrastructure, intergenerational infrastructure investment across our state, $3.6 billion, which in Tasmanian terms is the largest of its type ever. And in fact, in my term or our term of government, we've increased our investment in infrastructure, not only to support our state and the growing demands that its infrastructure needs, but in turn to create more jobs in so doing, and it's estimated that our infrastructure program in this year's budget will create 10,000 more jobs in our state. So it's designed to continue the momentum to stimulate our economy and to create more jobs. All of this can only be done with a strong economy and a good budget, and it's the means by which we do it in a growing state. There are now more Tasmanians than ever before, because in another record pace, our population has been growing at its highest rate in 30 years, four times higher than the year we took office. In fact, back under the former government, nearly 3,000 Tasmanians left the state looking for opportunities elsewhere. We have the oldest population, the second growest population rate in the country, and 19,000 more people have since then chosen to make Tasmania their home, with more reasons to stay than to leave, and I'm especially proud of that. It's always been our mission and our vision to be a Tasmania of more opportunity, and where every child can grow up safe with a good education and more reasons to stay than to leave, a bright future in their home state. So I'm very proud to talk to you about Tasmania. We've made some good progress. I always remind myself and our team that there's a lot more to do. There are more things we need to do to make sure that all Tasmanians are enjoying, sharing the benefits of a strong economy. We're some way off that. We're always a government too that recognises that the best way to achieve success and prosperity is by working with the non-government sector. We're always actively and innovatively looking at ways to do that. We take none of this for granted. There's always more to do. But our success, as I say, is attributable more to those outside of government who are propelling this rate of growth, which is unprecedented. We're a government that doesn't pick winners, but we certainly back them, and now are more strategically investing in those competitive strengths where Tasmania stands alone and there's a higher value, a premium on what we do. Tourism, agriculture, aquaculture, our connections with Antarctica and the Southern Oceans. Tasmania is a research and hub for excellence in that, and energy and advanced manufacturing. Our brand is so important to us, as I've said, and providing good, stable government for Tasmanians is also important. It's one thing that we are able to do, provide that stability that's so often sought after in the political environment and not that common these days, is something that my team and I have committed to from day one, and we're quite happy to be described as solid, stable, dependable, even boring. But that's our preference if it means we can give Tasmanians the confidence that we back them and their businesses to be the very best that they can. So thank you for the opportunity to speak a little about my most favourite subject. I enjoy the opportunity to do so, but we'll also enjoy taking questions. Thank you.
Just hang on a second. So we're up to questions and discussion. Now, if you've got the microphone, you got the call. If you haven't got the microphone, you haven't got the call. So just we've got plenty of time, folks, so plenty of time. Can I just cast your mind back to not to your recent successful election, but to the coalition's recent successful election? And as you know, there's a lot of talk and analysis has been written about how the coalition won because they did well in Queensland and West Australia. But as you know, Prime Minister Morrison won two seats in Northern Tasmania, and there was a view he might have won Lyons, but he didn't, but he won Bass and Braddon. Now, as you know, Bass and Braddon are among, I think, of income earning throughout Australia, would be about the 10 lowest in terms of income earning of all the electorates in Australia. So how we could see Mr. Morrison going into Northern Tasmania a lot. So how did that happen? Because without winning those two seats, the Morrison government would be a minority government. But you were also successful in Northern Tasmania. So what's changed in the last, say, 25 years there?
Yeah, you're right. Tasmania did help win that that federal election with the two seats needed. And I think it was largely, again, the result of good, stable government resonating and connecting with our community and very consistent with what we'd been doing as a government. And I think of the investments not only in our energy future but also in our roads and in our irrigation networks, which are helping fuel growth in agriculture, wonderful initiatives to support our freight and trade, and to support our tourism industry, our visitor economy more broadly, were well matched by federal government or Liberal Party election commitments that are being delivered and helping drive that confidence that we speak about and that optimism that exists in our state. So there was a story of hope. But you're right. I mean, our story has had its challenges, and we're needing to diversify our economy as well, and particularly in northern Tasmania, where the rate of growth has not been as high as it has in the south. We're working also closely with other partners like our university, which is expanding a campus into northern Tasmania, the Australian Maritime College, and a defence precinct, which will be established there through the Commonwealth Government. Blue Economy CRC, again, targeting those areas where Tasmania has a strong competitive advantage, is giving our communities in the north a lot more hope and optimism about the future, which is why their economies are now starting to perform more strongly too.
Question? Yeah, okay.
Mr. Hodgman, can you just outline how Liberal governments deal with the trade union movement, especially the more militant ones? Outline a few points how to practically get on with them and so you can go.
Yeah, and it's a challenge we're embracing now as a government as we go through our latest round of negotiations with our public sector about their wages and terms and conditions, and a lot of them represented by the unions, by unions who look after our nurses and our teachers, our police officers. We are, by nature, a collaborative government, and insofar as our state service is concerned, want them to be paid as well as they can, provided it's affordable and sustainable within our budget. So in terms of working with our unions, we've been able to agree to continue our discussions and negotiations and shelve, at least temporarily, any industrial action or disruption in our hospitals and our schools. And that's a good thing, and it's an essential thing for our citizens. In terms of some of the other activities, which are perhaps more common, a lot more common here and in other states than in Tasmania, I'm delighted to say it's not been a thing that's disrupted our economic progress. In fact, Tasmania's a place for more people to come and work.
There's a question here.
Good, thank you, Premier. That was very impressive. The rest of Australia, to what extent do you think your policies and the way you publicise them and carry them out, to what extent do you, given that their conditions, economic and cultural, throughout the rest of Australia are quite different, to what extent can your successes be replicated in the rest of Australia?
I'd be happy. Sorry. Well, we're available, as indeed our other states, to offer gratuitous advice. And there are areas in which we can collaborate, sincerely, I think, across our federation and actually deliver greater benefit to our nation. That's always an ambition, I would hope, too, of any premier. But we do tend to focus on our own patch. Our tourism industry, I think, is a great example of where we have shown demonstrated leadership and a model that is, in fact, being looked at closely by our fiercest competitors, every other state in the country. But I've alluded to one of the policy initiatives that was to embrace an area that's often highly sensitive and not always entirely supported, but which leverages off our greatest asset, and that's our wilderness areas, and to invite expressions of interest from the private sector as to what they might do to support sustainable ecotourism, world-class ecotourism in our state, because if we don't, we'll just fall back to the rest of the pack. So there are exciting collaborations between my government, the national government, which have similarly backed this initiative, and the private sector to build what will be world-class visitor experiences at Cradle Mountain or in Freycinet and Wineglass Bay. They are truly iconic destinations, and this will help elevate them to their rightful status as world-class destinations that are being properly protected. But it would only be possible if we'd been brave enough as a government, as we've been, to invite the investment of the non-government sector and to be prepared to accept that in our state, that whilst we must always carefully protect our wilderness areas, around 40% of the visitors to our state want to go to them. We need to find ways that they can do so safely and sensitively, but also proudly show what our state offers. Half of it's locked up. We should use as much of that as we can, and it is extraordinary wilderness, to help bring more visitors into our state and support our visitor economy. Just one example.
Premier, I think Tasmania is the most beautiful state in Australia, and I come down there regularly to go fishing. I've got two parts of my question. The first of all, just to draw your attention to the World Fly Fishing Championship.
Yes.
At the end of November, we've got 25 teams coming from all over the world to compete. We're hoping Australia is going to win.
Yeah.
But as one of the people in Fly Fish Australia said the other day, we want tourists, we don't want windmills. A very unreliable, if I may say so.
Jenna, we've got to move on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not very fast. So could we possibly have encouraged the tourists, as you're saying,
yes,
and not have windmills beside that idyllic lake, Lake Penstock?
So right. Suggestion,
there we go.
More fly fish, fewer windmills, I think.
And I look forward to welcoming the competitors in the World Championships. It's a wonderful fishery our island offers, inland, yes, and offshore. And it's featured in our latest tourism marketing campaigns. Mountain biking and walking and fishing are some of the things people love to come to Tasmania for. We will and are investing more in renewable energy, not just wind, also pumped hydro schemes to provide what will be a very reliable energy source for Tasmania, which also has had the lowest regulated power prices for businesses and households in the country during our term in government, and that's important as well. But to, as I say, serve as the fuel in what will put Tasmania into the enviable position of being the renewable energy battery of the nation, and it will provide security into the national system, which is a lot more insecure. And the Australian energy market has said that that our state's renewable energy base will be cost effective. It will provide that reliability. It will be cheaper for consumers, including on the mainland, on mainland Australia, so it's a win-win. So we will have both.
Just before we go to the next question, when I went to Tasmania in 1972 and arrived at the university, group after group of left-wing academics had told me the greatest enemy in Tasmania was the Hydroelectricity Commission.
Yes, yeah.
And they also told me it ran the state. Now, what we're finding now later on, you're standing here and telling us that Tasmania's got all this renewables because it's essentially got a very substantial hydro scheme.
Yeah.
So what's the left say about that now?
Yeah, it's interesting how times change. And there are, I mean, we'll be 100% renewable, self-sufficient by 2022, and that's a great thing for our brand.
And what percentage of that is hydro? State.
Well, 90. yeah.
Been there a long time.
And I had to remind our parliament and the people of Tasmania recently when there was a debate about coal and some small operations in Tasmania which have existed for decades and do support Tasmanians in employment and provide another aspect of energy generation from our state. Back in about 1981, former Senator and Greens National Leader Bob Brown said he would be more supportive of coal than he was hydro generation. So I'm not sure he'd quite be saying that now, but we believe in all our energy sources, and we're just on a natural transition as our country does move from old generation into new generations for Tasmania to be a better place than any time.
We've got plenty of time, folks, here.
Thanks. Thank you very much. I always enjoy visiting Tasmania, particularly Hobart. So I think you may have partially answered this, but I was going to ask as a follow-on, what advice you would give the federal government, no doubt minding wanting to shore up your own competitive position, but nevertheless, what advice would you give them about what they should be doing about investing in renewables? I know, hear that, what you say about 90%. And the other question relates to investment. I guess there's the good side and the downside, but what are you doing to make sure that the increased activity with the investment and with increased people coming does not have a counter effect of making it less attractive for people who want to get away from the rat race? And in association with investment, what about the Chinese dairy situation?
Okay, right. A lot of issues there.
Yeah, a few. And just perhaps on to conclude on the energy space, we don't presume to tell anyone else what they should or shouldn't be doing with their energy asset. We're lucky, I think, in my view, to be placed as we are. And there's a role for Tasmania to play in the national market. And again, when it comes to my vision for Tasmania, for it to be of national significance in such an important area of service to the nation, I think is a wonderful thing for us economically, but also in our place in our federation. But in terms of investment and growth in our state, one of the biggest challenges, or some of the biggest challenges we now have, come from very rapid growth. Population increase, investment interest in our state, demands on our infrastructure, traffic jams in the middle of Hobart, which we've never had, and a demand for skilled labour, which is a national problem, but of particular interest to me in Tasmania. So we do need more investment, and we welcome foreign investment. And most of that goes through Commonwealth agencies to determine the merits of it. But we're a government that, as I say, did declare on day one that we're open for business, and we support good investments, domestic and international, in Tasmania.
Question down there.
Mr. Premier, Justin Lazic, New South Wales Liberals. At the end of the 2018 financial year, there were only two states and territories with no net debt, New South Wales and Tasmania. Now Tasmania is the last one standing, still no net debt. What indirect taxation measures did you take to get into that position?
Yeah, and we are, I must inform you, on a trajectory to take on some debt in supporting that infrastructure investment that I've referred to. But it'll be manageable, it'll be affordable, it'll be the lowest rate per capita of any jurisdiction, and it's important, as I say, to stimulate that further economic growth that that we will need, as we're now feeling some of those global economic headwinds start to impact in Tasmania, but we're still the strongest performing economy in the country. And in terms of taxation, we've reduced the tax burden and cost of living burden for households and businesses as well, which is always our starting point. So we've increased no taxes and don't intend to do so, but have, as I mentioned, reformed our payroll tax regime, for instance, to be the most competitive and a draw card for business and investors to come to our state. Again, fueling the economy and increasing revenues and receipts to the state. Ironically, though, with our improved economic circumstances and a growing population, the GST has been written down, and Tasmania's getting less of a share. So we certainly cannot any longer be called mendicant by any stretch. But and also, we've had paradoxically a reduction in stamp duty receipts, whilst our property market's the hottest in the country. It's now very much a saturated market in and around Hobart. We're seeing more investment and development in the north, but it's taking some time to catch. So we've had about $500 million write down on our budget. So we need to keep the budget in surplus so that we can not only make those investments into essential services, but we've also had some of the state's worst bushfires this year, floods, a meningococcal outbreak to contend with, a lot of unexpected costs that we need to have the insurance blanket of a surplus to cover. But, yeah, we may not have that the ability to boast that we're the only state not carrying some debt, but as I'm often told by my treasurer, now's probably the best time to be borrowing.
Question up there. Lindsay?
I was just going to ask you the government's relationship and how the parliament is working, given that you've got a renegade Liberalist speaker, a Labor person resigning to be replaced by someone who isn't as Labor, and an upper house that no one on the North Island can understand. Is there any handbrake or restraint caused by the parliament, except for the odd strange bit of legislation about gender reassignment and the like?
Yeah, it's always an interesting place, politics, I think. And, you know, I've always felt, and my team from day one, that we just need to make it work. I mean, our parliament is small, 25 members in our lower house, the massive majorities of which I speak are a couple of seats in a Tasmanian context. So the slightest hiccup and things can change that balance. And they did, as you've referred to, but there are always swings and roundabouts in this business. But I've always said we were elected 18 months ago, re-elected with pretty much the same vote as the time before. Hare Clark delivered us fewer seats, but we've got to make it work. And that includes working with the crossbenchers as they are, with our upper house, and keeping our team together to deliver on our promise. And I think, notwithstanding all of that stuff happening, the record shows that we are. And I would not want for a second anything that we're doing or anyone is doing in the parliament to dampen the confidence in our community that has really fuelled the turnaround to which I've referred. So we guard it very protectively, and my job's just to make it work.
Question here.
You're doing a great job, thank you very much. In terms of the battery of the nation, which you mentioned, and the capacity of pumped hydro, critical to that is that, I think it's the Marinus Link?
Yeah.
Could you give us a bit of an update on the Marinus Link and the ability for Tasmania to stabilise the energy grid in southern Australia?
Yeah, and
before you did, just explain the what's it called again? The
Marinus
Link. Yeah.
Before that, the
Battery of the Nation.
Yeah.
Battery of the Nation. Could you explain that?
Yeah.
First,
yeah. And the really important point that you've made, Jared, is that, you know, 90% of the state hydro-powered, that's where the stability comes from. Wind supplements that, but pumped hydro, very similar to what's happening with Snowy, similar concept and scale, magnitude, will further increase our capacity, which is, as we do more work, supported by the Commonwealth Government, demonstrating we can provide not only enough for our state to be self-sufficient, but export more into the national market. To do that, we need not only more investment in those pumped hydro schemes, and that's being supported through a Commonwealth Government funding program, but also to have a second interconnector. We've got one, still works pretty well. There's been a few outages in recent times, which we've had to manage, but a second interconnector will provide that greater capacity to export the clean energy into the national market, help the Victorians and the South Australians have fewer blackouts over summer. And all of this is a massive undertaking. The numbers that I hear about what it might all cost are fast mounting. It is a project of national significance that's acknowledged by the Commonwealth and will need to be by other states. And already my government and the Morrison government invested tens of millions of dollars in just building the feasibility and business cases for both elements of that. Attracting a lot of interest from investors. We'll need to work out who's going to own it, run it, operate it, but all that work's well underway.
Anne?
Premier, I've lived in Tassie with Jared in the 70s, one year in Hobart, 4 years in Launceston. In fact, I'm going there tomorrow for the third Chamber Music Festival, which was started by a woman in Hobart, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's no state like it for the division between the north and south. It's almost like when you live there or you know anyone from there or you go there, that there are two states. And that you did mention how you're trying to invest more in the north. The north, to my mind, is the entrepreneurial part of Tasmania, and the south is much more in the public service mentality. But what can really be done? I mean, I know Mona's thinking of trying to move a section of it up there. A friend of mine runs Music of Eva, and she just says, we never get to the north. But, you know, you put something on up there, they say, oh, that's a south thing, so no one will go. So what do you do with this ridiculous north-south divide?
Yeah, and we have tailored a lot of our policies and government programs to drive some of that activity into the north, often in the arts and creative industries, because they're equally, as I believe, as important to Tasmania's current status as a great destination, but also a more vibrant Tasmanian community. So we have supported the Mona team to take their business north. We've got events and festival programs that are outside of Hobart and need to be for us to support them. We had a very biased infrastructure program in our early years just to stimulate more northern economic activity. But I think there's a bit of myth around this, and it's often thought by those who don't live here that it may be a bigger problem than it is. And an example I often point to is our mighty Hobart Hurricanes BBL cricket team. And a few years ago, if you'd said to me or anyone else that they might play their games in Launceston, called the Hobart Hurricanes, and draw the biggest crowds in the state, you would have laughed, but they now do, and they've been embraced by a Launceston community. So I think we have matured a lot, and that's just one example. A bit of healthy parochialism for sure, but I think now there's a lot more a unity around being Tasmanian that has broken down some of that.
Okay, so we're going to go there, and there. Okay, so there we go. Yeah.
Will, thank you very much for your sharing your successes and your beautiful new. Can we call it a nation? And but looking a little further back in the Huron Valley, there were probably three different refineries, a number of which were owned by the old North Broken Hill. And also you had a aluminium smelters in the north.
Yep.
And where has that all gone?
We've still got a number of major industrials operating in the state, big employers, and it's an amazing thing to think that multinationals would operate off our beautiful island so far south, and it does and is presenting real challenges for them and us as a government to ensure that that continues. There's been a transformation in Tasmania's economy. We're very strongly supportive as a government of our resource-based industries. We back them as strongly as we do the more developing and emerging industry sectors that are as important, but we've got a challenge to ensure that for those major industrials, Tasmania is a competitive place to operate from and to do business from. So improving our trade networks, our connectivity, ensuring we do all we can to keep their business costs down. We have a lever at our disposal, and that is our renewable energy, which is helping in many of them literally power our state as well, but also manufacture or produce product which they can brand as 100% renewable are the sorts of things we're doing to modernise, diversify our economy and make Tasmania a good place for investment. But yeah, there's certainly been changes over the years, but they play a really important role in our economic landscape still.
Thank you.
Question here.
Thanks, Premier. You mentioned people pouring money into businesses, and that actually applied to me because I was on a cruise ship down there this year and I poured a lot of money into the local taverns and enjoyed myself immensely. My main question is, though, on energy. With the ludicrous decisions of the Labor governments of Victoria and then South Australia to get rid of their traditionally fired power stations, will you end up exporting energy, do you think, to the main states to keep Victoria going?
Yeah, and our circumstances, as I've said, are entirely different. So for any role we can play in stabilising the national market, we will, because it's a very valuable product, a commodity, renewable energy, clean, reliable, low cost, as I say, as AEMO have confirmed it will be a great export for our state, and it will help provide some stability into the national market as well.
So there's a question here.
If I can just ask a question.
Speak into it.
Renewable energy in the form of offshore wind farms do not cause detriment to your natural heritage. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, and there are currently expansions of wind farms in our state, but offshore unlikely not yet. Well advanced, I would think, you know, we're close to a point where there are enough on island. There is enough on island generation, supplemented by the pumped hydro schemes, to be self-sufficient, but also to have that export capacity. But you're right. I mean, there's a good point here too that we shouldn't gloss over, and that's making sure we don't do anything through, you know, a positive business environment or our industrial base to compromise our brand, and that's a really important challenge for government. Our way of life and our natural environment is as important, so we're not doing anything at all to compromise that, but it's a big task for the government and for the community to maintain that, protect it. It's what's bringing so many people to Tasmania. We need to keep it that way.
Thank you, Premier. Bill Bowman. You mentioned, you shared with us the good news about the strength of the Tasmanian economy, therefore the increasing population. You mentioned the word infrastructure, specifically on housing. Are you satisfied with the housing situation to accommodate the increasing population in Tasmania?
Yeah, another one of our big challenges. We do have the hottest property market in the country. We've had rapidly increasing property prices, house values, which is great for people who own them, but if you're a first home buyer, they need help, so we've increased the support we give them. Similarly for rentals, we need more properties available for rental, and most importantly for affordable housing, because there's now a great pressure on us to provide affordable social housing and more homes for homeless Tasmanians. So not only have we done those things to which I've mentioned, we're releasing more government land for development. We've streamlined approvals processes to develop affordable housing and a good mix in growing communities close to transport networks. We've got our building and construction sector, as I told you, the busiest in the country, working hard to keep up with that pace. I can only but thank our Commonwealth Government and, of course, Tasmanian Senator Jackie Lambie for convincing the Commonwealth to retire our historic housing debt, because that's allowing us to invest more into our housing market, and our government's investing in affordable housing like none before it. We've got a very large $200 million affordable housing strategy, which is fast delivering more supply into that market, which is facing a lot of stress. It's a big priority for government.
Second last question, we've got to be brief.
Thank you for your talk. Can you tell me what is the growth rate, the economic growth rate in Tasmania, and what are the average earnings per capita?
State final demand, 3.4%. I can't tell you precisely that number. I'll take that on notice. And to the point, I guess, or to make the point, while I do acknowledge or do often speak proudly of Tasmania's economic resurgence, I cannot pass without mentioning that many Tasmanians are still, as Jared, you've noted, in economic and financial difficulty. There's a lot of stress in our health and community services sector. There's a lot of disadvantage. Whilst our, you know, our economic conditions are very positive and very buoyant, there's never a day that we don't recognise that there are many Tasmanians who are not feeling that and not sharing in that. So we need to be more careful in planning what we do as a government and how we support the private sector to disperse that growth into our communities and into very regionalised and decentralised parts of the state and increase people's earning capacity.
Just a final question about the Museum of Old and New Art, Mona, which is how a lot of people on the mainland are aware of Hobart through that. Now, how stable is that? Because I understand it, Mr. Walsh's business at Mona is very much built on his huge ability at successful gambling, right?
Mm.
So what happens? What happens when he picks a loser rather than a winner?
Well, so far he's done more winner picking than not. And look, we're a government that contributes to some of their festivals and events. They're massive draw cards to the state. They're very cutting edge and certainly I think are the product of a more culturally competent Tasmania that, you know, we could be such a place. So it's been a really important partnership. As to his business model, and heaven forbid if it were that a government would ever have to pick up and should never have to pick up and run such a thing, because best left to the private sector. David's got other plans to invest in new hotel and convention space close to Mona, which will help its economic sustainability. So we'll look forward to working with him on that. But yeah, it's been honestly, in terms of the things that are happening in the state to turn us around, the Mona effect cannot be underestimated. It's not everyone's cup of tea. But gee, it's proven to be, you know, extraordinary in its impact for Tasmania, and that's why my government supported it and a lot of what it does since day one as well.
Many thanks. Well, at Sydney Institute, we've always taken an interest in Tasmania, and it's great to have the Premier here today. I mean, Anne wrote the biographies of Enid Lyons and Joseph Lyons, and for my part, I always organise a small delegation once a year to go down to the winter solace in the Derwent River and swim nude. But having said that, we're very grateful you came today. You have a terrific story to tell, and you've told it very well. Quite an achievement, a terrific achievement for a Liberal to win two elections in a row in Tasmania with a majority government, winning a majority government, and that's very unusual because of the nature of the system. So we're very grateful you came here today. You gave us a very all-embracing coverage of where you've done well and of the remaining difficulties which you recognise. So we're very grateful for that, and we'll have you back sometime in the future. But for tonight, well done.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.